You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Brendan Kleene, both right for Brightside of the Sun. We're actually joining you mid-game because we're taking the risk here and saying the Suns are probably gonna fall, I imagine. They're down right now, I believe, 15 points halfway through the fourth quarter. They're currently down 110-95, I believe. Right now, Devin Booker has 28 points, 9 assists, so he looks on his way to his first career 30-point, 10-assist game. And as we expected with this game, like we talked about yesterday on the podcast, we both expected a pretty big blowout loss. But surprisingly, the Suns have stayed in it through the entire fourth quarter, and we'll have to see, obviously, over the last few minutes. But just what's your reaction to today's game so far?
It was James Harden especially looked kind of out of sorts for most of the first half. I think the reason we pulled the trigger on recording now is because he kind of came alive in the third quarter and gave him a 15-point end-of-the-road lead. He just didn't look his usual self, and the Rockets were turning the ball over. They actually weren't even firing off threes as much as they normally do. Kind of just a weird game for them overall. Trevor Ariza went out, and I don't know if it was the matinee start or what it was, but the Suns were lucky to be in it, even though it was a 7-point deficit. And then, obviously, in the second half, Harden just kind of did what he always does.
Yeah, to that point with Booker, obviously, we're talking about him. He got a second career start at point guard, and he's doing a lot better as far as that's going today. He only has 3 turnovers. He looks on his way to double-digit assist alongside 30 points, so the first time around, we saw Greg Monroe started in Tyson Chandler's place, but this is the first time I've seen the official lineup that Treon wanted the first go-around. And obviously, the difference between Chandler and Monroe defensively makes a big difference, almost light-year difference, because Monroe really can't guard anything on the rim, but Chandler actually gives his all on the rim, and it makes a big difference as far as the guys going up against him in the paint, even though he's 38 years old and he's still doing it. Right now, he has 10 points, 13 rebounds, so obviously, the difference between Tyson and Greg isn't talked about much in this podcast because obviously the centers aren't the focal point of this roster right now. But just what's the difference that the Suns can provide when having Tyson out there instead of Monroe?
Well, I think especially against obviously, it would not have gone well if Monroe had started against Clint Capela. That's not a good matchup for him whatsoever. Worse even than really anything I can imagine. So I'm glad that Tyson was able to come back in and play today. I think that helped the Suns quite a bit, especially at the end of that first quarter. You really saw when they had to go away from the offense, which I'd like to talk about in a minute, but that they had started the game with or into just really normal, kind of boring Booker pick and roll at the top of the key for several possessions to end the first quarter. Chandler really made the Rockets pay the game for a little bit of that, and Chandler was getting offensive rebounds, tip-ins, just kind of doing what he used to. He's had a good season having bursts here and there, and we saw one was like the biggest symbol of that difference for me.
As far as Monroe goes, real quick, we'll touch on this before we dive into other guys, but with Monroe, I think he's really good as far as a second unit center, but with his contract, obviously, it's not going to make sense to bring him back or anything like that. And also with Alex Len and his injury, he's out, so Monroe's taking his minutes right now. But when Monroe's on like he is and he has those post moves going, I don't think any other big, maybe outside of Marquese Chris, if he ever developed it, like could even do what Monroe can do. So just if Monroe's on, I mean, it really helps the Suns at points, even though we do really critique his defense a lot.
Yeah, I think that segues into what I was hoping to talk about with the offense and shows what can be. And I think caught myself thinking during the game today is that we're finally seeing like the best what Greg Monroe can be for this team. And the game plan that the Suns came out with to open the game today, smart, to kind of take some of the Devin Booker, who obviously we've seen struggle in that role a little bit in the first couple times he's gone, and really just take advantage of the spacing that him and Daniels was having. The Booker initiated everything. They were throwing the ball into the post, and because Chris got into foul trouble early and Tyson Chandler, and then especially once Greg Monroe was able to come into the game, he passed big man on this team. Obviously, Bender's pretty good too, and they were able to dissect the Rockets' defense on cuts and dribble handoffs, just getting so that Booker doesn't have to fight against double teams and try to round traps and things that he's been seeing for a while now. It really was a smart way to also attack the Rockets' defense, because they do have some defenders that you can expose a little bit, Ryan Anderson, James Harden, even Eric Gordon. So that's what I saw, and I think it kind of also shows the comfort that the coaching staff has using Monroe as a core part of the game plan instead of just throwing her when they have no other choice.
Definitely, yeah. With Monroe, he's definitely a valuable guy, but we saw early in the, I think it was maybe early in the third quarter or just the beginning of the fourth quarter, I forget which part of it, but he got ejected. He was frustrated with a call that Nene, he got a charge, and back-to-back times, he got a technical, so he was left the game early, and Tyson's been playing the rest of his minutes so far in the fourth quarter. But as far as Marquese Chriss and Dragan Bender go, I want to touch on those guys real quick, and also Josh Jackson. We can combine these all together, I guess. With Bender, right now he's 5 points, 2-6 from the field, 2 steals, but like I was texting you during the game, it seems like Bender is almost too passive at this point. I mean, we saw some flashes of aggressiveness a couple weeks ago, but that seemingly has disappeared at this point. And with Chriss, he got 3 fouls in the first, I believe, 3 minutes of the game, and then after that we've barely seen him since. So, and then also Josh Jackson has had his moments defensively today, but he is 0 of 10 from the field, and that confidence of his is showing through, obviously, but it can hurt the team as well when he has that tunnel vision going like he has today. So with those three guys, especially with Bender and Chris and Jackson, so to say, how did you grade those guys' performances today? Because for me, I think probably easily, maybe Jackson, even though he did have an 0 for 10 game, I think between the three of them, I think group-wise, the worst performance between these three players.
Yeah, I think it's hard to judge Chris. He didn't play really the entire first half. I'm sure Triano is just being careful. He is returning from injury, obviously. When a player like that who already struggles with fouls comes in after that long extended absence and a really, really miserable start to his return in the last game, 1 of 12, of course. So he fouls. Maybe it just kind of seemed like Triano didn't want to risk it, have him get into worse foul trouble and maybe not, you know, eventually kind of knock it into his groove the rest of the game. I actually thought that was... I did think he overextended Bender, just to provide some context for why I think that each of these players, maybe all, I mean, kind of all of them, did have pretty rough performances. So I do think that he didn't seem comfortable in that starting lineup playing the rotation that way. I think he's been most effective throughout the entire season, and that's kind of even with fluctuations of who's in that second unit with him. Mike James, we've seen Jackson go in and out, now Daniels is in the starting lineup, but it just seems to be something about coming in to replace Chris that really gets him going. So it was back to that routine, it seemed, and then he obviously had to come in the game, and he played like 13 straight minutes after coming in at that 9.5 minute mark of the first quarter before Dudley eventually, I think he finished the first half for him, or and Bender came in right at the tail end. But that, it just kind of hard for me to judge Bender too harshly when in a really weird situation like that. But Jackson, I agree with you, had some really nice moments. I think you tweeted a video of him just corralling James Harden. Like I said, Harden did not have a half that was up to his standards. And I think TJ Warren, actually, to include another person in there, Jackson were really the difference on defense in that first half. Blocked a shot from behind, I think it was Eric Gordon, and then swallowed James Harden, stole a dribble just at the top of the key from him. So I would agree with you that Jackson had the best performance, but I think Warren's the, you know, not to move on from those three, but Warren, I think, was the guy who impressed me the most today.
Yeah, with Warren, we talk about it a lot on this podcast, but at this point, it's almost just regular occurrence with TJ, him getting 20 or more, just so consistent nowadays. And I know we touched on a little bit on the podcast before, but I wanted to relay it back to you because today without TJ, I think it would have been a even bigger blowout than it was, even though it is just barely double digits right now. But just what's your thoughts on TJ just expanding his game almost in year four? Because I think now over the last week or so, maybe I'm reading it wrong. I don't know have you seen it or not, but it seems to me also TJ is getting a lot more confident as far as at least trying to shoot threes. Are you reading that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's attempted at least one for, seems like the past 2 weeks or 3 weeks, he's been shooting at least one of those shots every night. So, let's see. And there was a couple times even in the first half you could tell that he was going to shoot them, that he was open, and then, you know, the defender closed out hard, which is surprising, too, that the defender is playing it that way now. And maybe that's a mistake. It probably is. But Warren, obviously, we know that if that's been the key, I mean, that's been what everybody's so desperate for him to do, because he's going to just be devastating attacking closeouts once they come. And at this point, he just hasn't made the defense respect that shot, so he hasn't really had to play that way. But if he's able to knock consistently or even just show that he's going to shoot him more often, then players are going to start running at the three-point line harder. And obviously, you can just take one step in and nail that every day. Or you know, he's obviously... but today, I think the thing I noticed was the defense today. I don't know where I... for him, so I don't know how surprising it is to see that hopefully that can continue going forward.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think you go ahead.
Oh no, just no, continue.
I think I lost them a game, which is the perimeter defense. Interested to see who you think was the biggest, because we're saying Jackson and Warren did a good job, but I mean, the team had a 15 point they were down by 15 going into the third because they couldn't control the ball handlers of the Rockets. So I wondered for you, who's the biggest culprit there?
I think for me, I think it's – we blame Booker a lot. I don't think Booker was that much to blame today as far as defense goes. I know that's a thing with him, but I think even though Cannon's had a good game, I think Cannon's had some troubles, and also we've seen Jackson obviously have his troubles at times as well. But for me, I think it was more of a group effort because, I mean, obviously with – Harden and Chris Paul, you're going to have a really tough time stopping those guys every possession. And then also, Rachoy Daniels, he was a big guy in that too. He got five quick fouls in his first 15 minutes of action. So, if I had to pick one guy, I think it's more of a group effort, but I think one guy, it's Troy Daniels. And I guess we want to touch on him a little bit. He was 1 of 4 from three-point range, had a really quick game today. So, when Troy's cold like he is, like he was today, just how does that affect the offense, you think?
Yeah, I would agree with you that Daniels was one of the bigger problems defensively. And I think another thing to mention there, that you mentioned Cannon and Daniels, the two guys who each had five fouls today. The team, wrong to say that they don't have tools to stop players. Like, people say that, you know Booker, not good at defense, I think. People think that the reason for that is because he's a little bit of a subpar athlete compared to other elite. But that's not the problem for him. The problem is that and Cannon, I think, are all victims to this, where even if they can get in front of guys, they foul or they don't play through the end of the possession. I think this team just, the reason that they struggle so much with the Rockets is a lack of defensive discipline. Like you're saying, it's a group effort that it's one of the more simple plays in all of basketball from an elite team, but just the trying to defend a Clint Capella, James Harden pick and roll is almost impossible for a team that, you know, does have the talent disadvantage. They don't really have Spurs on defense at this point, but also don't have the discipline to make the right reads, stay home on shooters, or to rotate the right way when they do have to do so. And I think that, you know, it's deadly when you make those mistakes against Houston. Offensively, though, Daniels, I think it still just helps to have him out there, but obviously you're not going to win many games when four and barely play, and then you're right back to the same problems when you're overplaying Cannon, Jackson, Bender, and then you're back to the problems that happened before the lineup change.
Hey, real quick, quick question as far as Jackson and Warren and Booker all go, because with Daniels, I texted you a couple times about maybe him being a candidate to trade deadline. We touch on that more when we touch on Scott Bordeaux's report later in this podcast. But But with that being said, if Troy Daniels is moved at the deadline, do you want to see, I mean, Booker, if we want to check back on the box score right now, they're down by 7 points with a minute and a half remaining. Booker has 31 points, 10 assists, which is his first ever 30-point 10 assist game and a second career start at point guard. So they're down by 7 right now. But what's your thoughts on Jackson at shooting guard instead of Troy Daniels in the second half of the season, maybe after the trade deadline? Because I think if you want to maybe help Jackson even more, I think just starting him and having him just baptized by fire in the last 30 games makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think that's probably what we're going to see. Ben, you know, Triano was playing the rotation really tight and kind of, you know, we're punishing Jackson with playing time as his folks kind of came and went during December and early January. That's kind of gone away. He's giving Jackson minutes regardless. I mean, like we said, he's now 0 of 11, missed another three since we started recording, and still got 20 minutes, still got the top assignment, defending James Harden quite a bit, defending Eric Gordon as well. So I think that, you know, that's what you have to do with keys. And maybe it was the right decision. I trust Triano to kind of make the right read on that. But at the end of the year, especially after the All-Star break, if changes do happen, I would totally think that Jackson's the most likely guy to get those starts, spacing be damned. But we should probably move on to the Boyle report, kind of.
Yeah, we
going
should.
Going into the roster changes.
Yeah, we should, because that really segues into what Bordeaux tweeted yesterday. And it was not sort of a bombshell, because, I mean, I kind of expected this as far as the Suns getting aggressive. And with seeing Booker taking these steps forward, and also TJ Warren being a real sidekick now, I mean, if we're checking back in on the game as well, Warren has 24 points, Booker has 31. The only other guy in double digits for the Suns today is Tyson Chandler and Cannon with 12 and 11 respectively. So they're obviously need to get help for those two guys, and that's sounds like what McDonough's going to do coming up forward in this draft and free agency, because he told Bordeaux in his report, the main part of his report was being aggressive in free agency. We haven't seen the Suns do that in a while. They were trying to get a meeting with Blake Griffin. We don't know if Griffin canceled that or if the Suns canceled that. We still don't know. It's still murky on that. Paul Millsap, the Suns canceled on that. That's this summer. They went full youth commitment. But now it seems almost McDonough is retreading his thoughts on that, maybe accelerating it a year in advance because of Booker and Warren's advancements. But does this signal to you maybe that McDonough is feeling the pressure? Because I feel like the most outside of that report, I think that's what I'm reading from it the most.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that, as I got through the piece, I was just like a really big, you know, if you compare, so the way that I was thinking about it, so you compare what we heard, the patient rhetoric that we heard from, well, Sarver, Donna, and maybe that, you know, that was a certain element of performance, I think, going on there too, especially from Sarver. Being really kind of poking fun at himself so much like he did. But to hear that and compare it to how brash almost McDonough sounds in these quotes, it just seemed like those are the only two public quotes that he's really given or, you know, interviews that he's given about their plans with building the roster was that press conference when they introduced James Jones over the summer. And he appeared for the media when he fired Earl Watson, but that wasn't to discuss any sort of trades or anything like that. And this interview that he gave to Scott Bordeaux, that I understand that Devin Booker's become an all-star candidate. TJ Warren's become one of the scorers in the league, really efficient guy that was unexpected during his early career. But outside of those two, there really been that much change or progress that you would want to build on. So it was just odd for me to like that.
Yeah, I pulled a quote real quick from the story, and here's what McDonough had to say to Bordeaux about staying patient or going forward. Here's what he had to say about that. Here's the start of the quote. He said, "There are certain core pieces that are starting to solidify," McDonough said to Scott Bordeaux. "I think we'd be foolish or naive to wait forever or be overly patient. We've been, I think, relatively disciplined with contracts. We've given out in terms of length and dollars. But yeah, we're planning on being one of five or six teams with a decent amount of cap space, and we'll see if we can improve the team." So it seems as if, because he also mentioned in the article later on, June and July. So I think that gives him flexibility as far as the draft goes too. Real quickly, I guess we can give our ideas with this. Just I'll let you have the floor first, because I feel like you might have a really good idea.
Yeah, I think
what do you think McDonough is gonna do?
Yeah, I think that he was smart to in July, and a lot of the, you know, the headline might be slightly misleading, because it's about free agency, and I think some of what McDonough was trying to say is along the same lines of what we've been talking about here, is that of the money, they're one of the only teams in the league currently with cap space, meaning that they'll carry that much, $8 million, into the summer. They'll start to make moves there with Alex Len, Alan Williams, etc. But they also, as Bordeaux mentions in the piece, might have 3 first-round picks. Because as of right now, the Bucks have been sliding, and the Suns actually now where it is in the draft. So they could have 3, and that's huge. They're not going to take 3 rookies into next year. Maybe that means that they trade. I don't know what would happen there, but it is smart to – he's talking about both things at once, and I think that's the right to go down. He does say the only piece is toward the end. He says, I think for us to significantly – that meaning the cap space at the deadline, actually, and take us out of the free agent market, player in free agency, we would have to take a really good player coming back that fits with our young core. Say he doesn't necessarily mean like 20 or 21 like the rest of the team kind of is, but just not somebody toward the end of their career that's really not going to make a difference when this team's good. So I think that really it's just reiterating the patience in a way, but also just saying that they're not opposed to it like so many fans of teams have been. The Sixers didn't spend money for years until last summer, you know what I mean? So I think he's just opening the door a little bit, but it does change things. What it changes to me for the most part is talking about, James Jones talked about it with us on Brightside Night, that they really do view Booker and Warren as star level players.
And that, to me, that's kind of a scary thought, right? I mean, if they thought Josh Jackson was going to be the star guy, but now you have Warren, they're pointing up as that guy. So you now have 3 wings you're building around, and obviously we've talked about TJ and JJ having a struggle as far as fit goes so far the first half of the season. So like you said, McDonough's mentioned Warren a lot. So is James Jones. And I know Josh Jackson's a high prospect of theirs, but how are they going to go about this? Because I feel like just long term, I feel like just JJ and TJ isn't going to work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Jackson's jumper has, we've already, I feel like I've seen enough progress from it compared to early in the season. I haven't checked the percentages. I'm probably going to write something up on his improvements soon, just statistically. I guess this Rockets game kind of screws that up. But I think his jumper's improved enough, and he's become a more his role has become more clear and defined over the course of the season. He's buying into that enough where I do think, I mean, we both just agreed that he should probably be starting the rest of the season. So if he hadn't shown a little bit, I don't think either one of us would be saying that, because it would be a disaster if early season Josh Jackson was going to be starting next to TJ Warren. But I don't think it necessarily worries me yet, because he is a rookie. But I think, they're going to have to get a point guard, I think, and McDonough does kind of point to that, because having somebody who, even if he's backing up Booker, or maybe they play together and they're a combo guard, like, we've gone through all those possibilities, but that's going to make a lot of the fit stuff easier in my mind. And then just to go through quickly the free agents that Bordeaux mentions, and then I know you have a few from the piece that you updated that aren't on this list, but Clint Capella, going to be hard to get. Aaron Gordon, who actually interests me. Enes Kanter, Derek Favors, Tyreek Evans, Yusuf Nurkic, Elfrid Payton from the Magic, and Marcus Smart from the Celtics. We've talked about Smart, I think, but Gordon interests me, but who else do you think that this team could reasonably go after that would make sense along, you know, the age range?
Now, obviously this might be kind of controversial with his knee injury right now, and I obviously don't know how he's going to command money-wise on the open market. And it might not be much now with how only 5 or 6 teams are going to be having that money, but what's your thoughts on Jabari Parker? Because for me, I feel like if there's going to be a place that that someone takes a risk on Jabari, it has to be the Phoenix training staff, right? Because I feel like if they're going to use Bender or Chris as a trade asset later on, maybe use some of those picks and get like a big or a point guard, I think Jabari actually makes a lot of sense as a 3rd or 4th scoring option, doesn't it?
I really like watching Jabari. I think he's still going to be a really good offensive player. I guess the way I've been thinking about him and his free agency, kind of since his injury, really, I still feel like, I mean, and he is a restricted free agent, so clearly Milwaukee has the rights to match any offer that's made to him. If they, you know, they will give him the qualifying offer to get. I've always just kind of assumed that they would match anything because they're in a small market. They're desperate to show Giannis they can form a competitive roster and become a contender sooner rather than later. So I've always just kind of assumed that the core they have, they're going to do whatever it takes to retain them. I mean, they paid me Snell like $10 million a year to him. I just feel like Jabari's probably not leaving.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think that also could put Milwaukee in a bad situation later on because, like you said, they have committed long-term money to Tony Snell. They're going to commit long-term money to Chris Middleton, long-term money to Jabari. So I feel like that's setting up for like a 1 or 2 years down the line from now, just unless they're going to have to clean some of those contracts out somehow, some way, like Dellavedova or Henson, maybe use some assets to get those guys off the books. They want to get Jabari back. But Aaron Gordon also really intrigues me, like you brought up. I mean, I don't know if Orlando values him that much with John Hammond being the new GM, but they could just build around Jonathan Isaac and Trae Young or whoever they take with the top three pick and move on from there. But what's your thoughts on Aaron Gordon with the Suns? Because I feel like you could just, honestly, you really do it if they wanted to, a sign and trade with Chris and some picks for Gordon, and Gordon really slides it perfectly into Chris's spot.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I think people are probably going to notice as we talk about every free agent, it's like, well, what do we do with Bender or Chris? And they brought themselves into this by drafting two players with so much overlap in the same draft, because I feel like inevitably for me to imagine a situation where they add talent this summer and still have both of those guys on the roster. Because I don't think you can go much longer if you really do think you're competitive in the near future with those two guys just backing one another up.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't seem like, you know, you spent two lottery picks on players that play the same position. I'm probably hoping Bender would become a center eventually, and he still can, but it just seems to me if McDonough really does play, and James Jones seem to have similar thoughts about being very impressed by the progress the roster's made, it just seems really unlikely that if you add some player, let's say they add Marcus Smart, just to put a name out there, and they have Smart, Booker, Warren, let's say Bender, and I don't know, let's just say Tyson Chandler, just to keep it simple, going in next summer, or going in as their starters. Like, are we really going to go into year three of Bender just backing up Chris or Chris backing up Bender? That seems unlikely. So to me, that was one of like the dominoes that kind of fell in my mind, which is like, can't really be aggressive, then have to change with those two guys.
Now, with those two guys, I feel like if I had to pick who's the more valuable asset league-wide, I feel like it's Marquise Chris. Do you feel like that's the same vibe you're getting to? Because I feel like maybe Bender, because I know like Kevin O'Connor reported on it in Vegas, I believe, but that Bender stock was really low among a lot of rival GMs. So if they're going to use one of those two guys as a trade piece, I think it has to be Chris, right?
Yeah, I think it does. I think not only was he a more high-profile guy because he went to college here, I think that's kind of how I've always read it, but also that he has shown more. He was a starter. That carries weight considering that he was able to keep that position. And I think everyone would kind of agree that statistically and efficiency-wise, he's been a more productive player. That's kind of hard to argue, so I would think you're right.
Yeah, and with that point, I think the Suns have a really good opportunity to clear another double-digit amount of millions as cap space goes if they wanted to, by clearing off Tyson and Jared Dudley and even Troy Daniels' $3 million off the books they wanted to this trade deadline. So I think if we're going to talk about if they want to add even more cap space to this free agency class, which is – if we want to throw out there, it's not that good, to be honest. Like, I think if you have a guy like Clint Capella or DeAndre Jordan lean the big man class, it's not a good sign as far as that goes. And the 2019 free agency class looks a lot better and promising with stars like Jimmy Butler and Kawhi Leonard. Even a big like Hassan Whiteside makes sense. They wanted to go that route down the line. But with this class of 2018 and with the Suns having cap space, and they're able to add even more cap space than they wanted to with those three guys, who do you think is more likely to be traded at the deadline? I think we brought this up last episode, but if you wanted to relay through those three guys real quick for the audience, just how do you feel like moving Tyson, Jared, and Troy would go for McDonough? Because I feel like that's what he's going to have to do if he wants to add that extra cap space.
Yeah, so the important thing for people to, and it's something I've been trying to like see, think about with all of this too, and it was something that we were running into when we were bouncing trade ideas off of each other earlier, is that especially with big fish that are coming this summer with Paul George and LeBron James, the Suns aren't in the running for those two, and that's why the free agency class doesn't look so good for them necessarily, but there's certain teams, the Lakers, the Mavericks maybe, and DeMarcus Cousins is another name that's going to be a big contract probably. A lot of those teams aren't going to want to have money on the books next year. Anybody that thinks that they have a shot to sign those max type guys isn't going to want to add any money for 2019. And the problem with Chandler and Dudley especially, but also Troy Daniels has $3 million for next. So any deal where the Suns are going to send that money outbound is going to be hard for any team that is going to want to spend this summer. So they're looking at a smaller group of teams, maybe more of the contending type teams that have any plans to add those free agents. And then then you're wondering, does a contender really want Tyson Chandler? Jared Lee, maybe, and he has been playing well recently. Troy Daniels, probably even more likely. So I think I would rank them that way, but it's going to be interesting to just kind of see the team names that start to pop up with these guys and how the priorities shake out there.
Now, this is obviously just a rumor I'm throwing out there just randomly, because I feel like this team makes a lot of sense for Troy Daniels. It is Oklahoma City with the Andre Robertson injury happening and their need at shooting guard now, even though Robertson's a lot, way, way better defender. Troy Daniels is also a way, way better scorer. So I think that could add a really unique dynamic to Oklahoma City. They could have maybe like Grant or Huestis take over a little bit with Robertson, have George put a little bit more effort in defensively to cover for that as well. But just with contenders, like you said, with Troy Daniels, that makes a lot of sense to ship him off to someone for like maybe like a late first or maybe an early second round pick if you can get that for Troy Daniels. So, and if they are able to get Davon Reed in the rotation, it makes a lot of sense to move him in the next couple of weeks. So what teams out there make a lot of sense for Troy Daniels? Because I feel like if you added him on to, let's say, Oklahoma City or even like a Boston roster, I think that makes a huge difference for them in a playoff game.
I think Oklahoma City is the one I keep coming back to. I think that makes a ton of sense to me. I also think that was just in my head. I completely lost it. Well, there's who I keep coming back to. I was just trying to come up with somebody on the spot to enliven the conversation. But Milwaukee doesn't sound so bad to me, but with the financial stuff we were talking about with them, I just think, I mean, the real thing to highlight for me is that Daniels is probably the best shooter, pure, like, gunner shooter on the market. Kyle Korver went last year, and that was really big, and Tavs gave up a first, I think, to get him, and obviously Daniels is not Kyle Korver, but I think that shooting's going to be pretty in demand, and that's why I continue to think that Daniels has a decent shot to get dealt.
Yeah, I know you brought that up. Bojan Bogdanovic was traded last year from, I believe, Sacramento, if I'm not mistaken, to Washington for a late first-round pick, or it might have been a different team, but he got traded for a late first-round pick.
The Nets,
okay. Yeah, he got traded from Brooklyn to there for a late first-round pick, and I think Troy Daniels is a lot better shooter than Bojan, so I think you could easily get a late first-round pick for Troy Daniels if you wanted to. But any other, as far as the Bordeaux report goes, I think the Suns, I haven't had to check the box score yet, but the Suns did end up losing today, so we can add that in there. But what's your thoughts on just overall the Bordeaux report and what that means for the Suns moving forward? Because now I think the clock's ticking as far as McDonough finally pulling his all-in move, it feels like.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think in the short term, it's obviously going to be something to track now for now until, 4th of July? It kind of changes the whole trajectory from now until then, just the openness to being a little more aggressive there. But in the short term, I think thing now is just to see how their priorities change at the deadline. I think that they'll be more, they might take a little bit less to get off of Tyson Chandler. They might be willing, or Jared Dudley, they might also be willing to give more in a package to get off that salary. And just to wrap the box score, the game recap, they did lose the Suns 113-102. They fall to 17-33, 50 games into the season, and they'll take on the Grizzlies tomorrow on a back-to-back. A little bit of rest late this afternoon as opposed to tonight, so hopefully that helps them. But is there any big other takeaways you had from that Brodeau report as far as a short-term?
Yeah, for me, I feel like obviously it might bring a little bit as far as trade value. I know Rozier looked really good last night for Boston, but what's your thoughts on pursuing Marcus Smart just as a temporary, maybe just like a long-term solution as the second point guard, maybe first point guard next season temporarily if they drafted like a Trae Young or Colin Sexton, for example? Because I feel like McDonough loves making moves for those restricted free agent types, and I feel like he was around when they were scouting Marcus Smart, and Suns do need a point guard. So even though he isn't a good shooter, I think that makes a lot of sense as far as if the Suns were going to make a move for a bigger name, just to make some sort of move to help out the roster in some sort of fashion. I feel like if there's one name on the deadline that makes a lot of sense, it is Marcus Smart.
Yeah, I think he's an ideal fit next to Booker for sure. As far as, maybe at the very end of his career when he has to kind of change his game, and he is not as much of an athlete like he is now and can't just barrel to the rim. Maybe he'll develop a jump shot, but and no soon will he be able to shoot. He has been on the ball this year, but he's been a positive still and is a good passer, a great defender. So I think he's a pretty solid fit next to Booker.
Definitely.
It makes a ton of sense to me.
No, definitely. I think moving forward now, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens over the next 10 or so days till the trade deadline, because nowadays it is a week earlier. Instead of February 16th, it is February 8th. So the trade deadline is really approaching faster than we thought. And it's crazy to say, Brennan, we're already 50 games into the Sun season. Isn't that just crazy to think about? Because I feel like the podcast season's flown by, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah, it's crazy. When I said that just now, I'm looking at the record, 17-33, I feel like I was just surprised by the fact that we were halfway through the season and now we're getting close to two-thirds already. So yeah, it's I'm really excited for February just to see what changes with the team, but we got a lot to talk about between now and then as the rumors start to fly in.
Oh, for sure. It's traded on season, folks. The Suns did end up losing today to Houston Rockets. It's not that big of a surprise as we predicted in the last podcast. They will travel to Memphis after today's game. They will be there Monday to face Memphis, then they will be back at home to face the Dallas Mavericks. So until then, guys.